play.
Sir.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kane is in the building.
Yeah. Alright, already the show goes on all night. Till the morning we dream so long. Anybody ever wonder when they will see the thunder? Just remember when you come up.
And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Always Pressing PGA DFS Podcast. After a week off, we are back to preview the 2019 Wells Fargo Championship in Charlotte, North Carolina, the Quail Hollow National Golf Club. In order to break it down, as always, my co-host on Twitter at DFS Golf Gods, Jesse, how we doing, man?
Doing well, dude. Finally, a little bit of spring weather around here. I know everybody like tunes in this podcast to figure out what the weather is like around Kentucky. So, been able to play some golf recently, which is nice to get out of the house. Good week off, kind of mid season to get a week off there from DFS. Even though I, of course, played Euro and failed at that as well. But how are you?
I'm good. I'm just like you. I kind of just tuned out for golf. I'm doing baseball like crazy, so it was nice to have a little breather from the golf world, but it's good to have it back. I bet come Wednesday or Thursday it'll be really good to have it back. Still kind of not feeling the full, hey, we got golf to do, even though the Wells Fargo is a pretty damn good tournament. But
really good.
Weather's been good out in California, living the dream, golfing year-round like usual. And, things are good. But like I said, we got the Wells Fargo at Quail Hollow to chat it up. We left off with the RBC Heritage. CT Pan won his first career tournament. We saw him almost win one last year. He got it done. He held on. He played a great Sunday and then held off, or finished strong, I guess, because one of the last ones to finish. But he wins it at 12-under. Kuchar does it again. He loves that course. Just keep that in mind for the future. 11-under for Kuch. And the DJ, huge Saturday, in the lead, and then just stumbles on Sunday. He fell apart big time. He started pressing, and it got ugly. I finally got to watch some golf on that Sunday, and it was brutal, but that was 2 weeks ago. Do you have any thoughts on that, Jesse? If not, it really doesn't matter because no one cares anymore about the RBC Heritage.
I didn't get to watch. That was Easter Sunday, right? I think I was on the road pretty much all day traveling to see family. But yeah, dude, that DJ collapse was wild. I had one lineup, which was 6-6, and that was like the lineup that I had to like make a little bit of headway. And of course, it had DJ in it. And I don't know, man. That was an odd back nine for me. I opened up Shot Tracker and he had like five bogeys in a row with a couple doubles thrown in there. It was weird. But man, he's weird in the lead. You would think he would just smash that, right? I mean, he's in the lead.
I think he dominates.
He's by far the best golfer in the field. But that's golf, dude. That's how wild golf can be. And then CT Pan comes out of nowhere. I mean, he hadn't really been playing that great, but man, again, like another unknown, or when I say unknown, obviously CT Pan's known to the DFS world, but to your normal golf fan, probably doesn't know CT Pan. That's quite a few this year that we've had of guys like that are first time winners.
Yeah, it's been fun. We talked about it for the last few years about all the young, really good golfers out there. So it's good to see CT do it. And it goes to the narrative you see all over the Twitterverse coming into that tournament that there's always some Asians near the top of the leaderboard at the Heritage. And sure enough, CT Pan takes it down. Interesting week, fun week. I had a 6-6 that looked great going into the weekend. And I think they combined to go 14 over on Sunday. And that included DJ. It was just an absolute joke. It meant cashed. I was very furious on that one.
Yeah.
But
same thing happened to me.
Yeah. Very, very brutal. Everyone just shit the bed. But we move on. We move on to the Wells Fargo Champs to begin at Quail Hollow. Really, really great golf course, really great event. Why don't you give us some past event history?
Yeah, so last year, it's been played at Quail Hollow for a while, except for 2017. I'll get there in just a second. But Jason Day was your winner last year. Shot 12-under, two shots over Nick Watney and Aaron Wise. 2017 champion was Brian Harman, but they moved the golf tournament to a different course there in North Carolina. I can't remember exactly where it was. Because they had the PGA Championship at Quail Hollow that year, and Justin Thomas was your winner, 8-under par, two shots over Franny, Louie, and Patrick Reed. So before 2017, kind of throw that out in your stats if you're looking at that winner, but James Hahn, kind of a weird winner over Roberto Castro, of all people, in a playoff 9-under in 2016. Rory's won this tournament twice. JB Holmes is a past winner here. Lucas Glover, past champion of the Wells Fargo, and Anthony Kim.
Ooh, AK.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, side
which note, apparently he's never coming back.
I was about to say, did you see the report? You know, the guy from Golf Week or whatever saw him in LA and he says his golf game's non-existent.
Yeah.
But there's like two caveats in that little brief article. A, he's not golfing, or B, he has his insurance claim from his injury where he can't like golf for like X amount of years because he's still injured or something. So he has to say he's not golfing. There's two ways to look at it.
I think he can play. I just don't think he can play professionally. Like he can't return to Yeah, dude, man, can you imagine golf right now with Anthony Kim? I know this is getting like, way off topic, but that would be so probably, much fun.
There's probably people that play DFS because they love playing DFS, and they're degenerates like the rest of us that have no idea who Anthony Kim is. Like zero.
Probably.
Anthony Kim was competing with Tiger Woods back in the day.
Yeah.
Like dude, this guy was legit.
But he was also a good personality. Like he wasn't your normal stuffy golfer. He was a good personality and seemed like just an overall cool dude. So
he would have fit in with this young crew now.
Yeah, for sure. He would have like a blast.
A tatted up dude out there on the golf course, tatted up Asian dude. Like, it's been great. It's been good times. But, all right, good past event history. Let's talk about the course preview here. I screwed up. We should have had Kevin on to talk about this. Kevin is a past club a pro at Quail Hollow. He still works in the North Carolina area. But he passed on some notes. I'll mention at the very end, brief notes. But it's a par 71 now, 7,554-yard golf course. Top five toughest course on tour pretty much year in and year out. It fluctuates in the top five, but pretty much there year in and year out. It is super, super long. It is tree lined where you can get, you're not like, it's not tree lined as much as it's like on top of you. You can miss the fairway and be okay for a little bit, but obviously if you're in the trees, you're in trouble. The rough right now is overseeded ryegrass, which these guys like to play out of a lot more than what was the Bermuda rough that was there during the PGA Championship. There's all kinds of fun stuff here. There's eight par fours over 450 yards. There's a couple par fours that are drivable, like within 350 to 375 yards. There's some very tricky par threes, but there's also some par fives that have very decent eagle scores. It's like it's all over the board as long as you're on your game, and driving distance is like the number one stat that people point to. Accuracy, driving distance, that kind of deal. Is very, very popular. There's bunkers around every green. So you have to have a very good short game, because if you aren't driving it perfectly and you're relying more on, say, long iron play and you're not accurate with that, there's a ton of around the green play involved between the bunkers, between just getting up and down. Like when Jason Day did his thing, he was getting up and down beautifully all over the place. And that's one thing that saved him a lot. He's also making crazy putts. These greens are Bermuda greens. They're overseeded this time of year, so a little more friendly what you saw at the PGA, but they're still extremely fast. Some of the faster ones on tour. So some guys love it because they roll kind of fast and pure. Other guys don't like the speed, obviously. So pick your poison there. It's just a super challenging course. Usually the cream rises to the top here, as you mentioned. Like the guys that won during those years, they were some of the better golf. Even JB Holmes was one of the top golfers at that time on tour. But like Rory, J-Day, like you mentioned. And if it's not just, you know, the cream of the crop, it's bombers. Bombers dominate this golf course, do very, very well at this golf course. So that's something to think about. And I will mention, Kevin, I gave him a joke. He said, if you have any questions about Quail, ask away. So go to at Kevin's Delight on Twitter. He'll answer all. He knows Quail better than anybody on Twitter that'll respond to you. But his brief course preview, it's a big, beautiful ballpark, difficult par threes, driving accuracy isn't a must, must be a good iron player from 175 plus. He could go on and on. So take it as you wish, but he'll give you all the info you need. It's really good stuff, but it's going to be a challenging course and should be a ton of fun. What kind of key stats are you looking for if you're targeting Quail Hollow?
Just before we move to that, I've been to this tournament before. I think it was the year James Hahn won. Buddy and I went Thursday and Friday, and it's a really like it rivals. I mean, obviously nothing is as good as Augusta National, but I really think it rivals Augusta National. Just the look, the way it's kept up and everything. I really was impressed with the golf course whenever I was there. So with as far as stats go this week, driving distance is a key, I do believe. Greens in regulation, like usual. I mean, with the scores, you can go either way, I think, if you look at birdie or better or bogey avoidance. you know, you may weight them kind of equally. That's kind of how I have my model at this point on Fantasy Labs, is basically even just one slight more point to birdie score than over bogey avoidance. And plenty of course history, obviously, to look at too. They've played this golf course a lot over the last few years, so, or over the last 20 years.
I believe they started in like 93.
Yeah, it's been a long time. So plenty of course history stats. And, you know, so that's kind of what I'm looking at as far as, you know, usual greens and regulation, but weighting more driving distance than accuracy. And then, you know, like I said before, birdie and then birdie or bogey about equal, and then course history. Sorry.
No, for that. No problem. I'd throw in some par five as well there. That's something I
no 100%. Yes, yeah. I agree.
I just think if I like everything else you had, I said if I had to add anything else, it'd be par five on top of that. Just these bombers, they can take advantage of the par fives.
That's where all the scoring is. Yep. Yep. Yeah. And those are the easiest holes on the golf course, which is typical, but you know, they're all playing under par for the most part, at least close to 0.4 of a shot. So, and this is, man, it's a really difficult closing stretch too. 16, 17, and 18 are, yep. It's a really, really tough stretch. 16 is a par four. You've got to hit it downhill. It's a left to right dog leg that goes down the hill with the water pretty much surrounded by, I mean, to a green surrounded by water. 17 is a really tough par three. And then 18 is back up the hill the whole entire way. Par four, it's long. It's the hardest hole in the golf course. Plays 493 yards, par four. It's really tough. So it's a tough closing stretch. There could be a lot of carnage coming in.
I love it. I love it. Let's talk about some fan share before we get into the DraftKings pricing. Guys coming in good form. Last three events, DraftKings scoring leaders, Rory McIlroy. Kokrak is second, averaging 92 points per tournament in the last three. Johnny Vegas, 91.33. When we get to him in DraftKings pricing, talk about the price bump this week compared to what we have been playing Johnny Vegas at. But Sam Burns is fourth. You got Ricky Fowler fifth, Stenson, Hughes, Jones, K.H. Lee, and Hideki Matsuyama round things out there. He goes far back as six tournaments, a lot of the same names, but Rory still leads the way. You got Rose is second now. Ricky, Kokrak, Finau fifth. Chip McDaniel is sixth. Didn't know where that one came from. But
don't you remember Sergio talking about Chip not too long ago?
We were talking about Chip. Yeah. That's the thing. Sergio Garcia, Alvaro Ortiz, Johnny Vegas, and Jonathan Birds, a couple different names there to take a peek at. Now, if we look at the last 4 years of tournaments at this course, so the Wells last year, the PGA in 17, and the two Wells prior to that. So the last four events at this tournament. I know the PGA is a different time of year, but just kind of wanted to keep it all in sync on this course. Jay Day is leading the way. Roberto Castro, he has only played one of those four tournaments. Take it with a grain of salt. It was that year he said he finished second, so 100 DraftKings points. Aaron Wise last year with his runner-up finish. You got Rory. He's the highest scorer of someone who's played all four events here. Then Phil Mickelson second for guys that played all four events here. When we get to course history, Phil Mickelson is a beast at this course. Chesson Hadley, of all guys, he's averaging 75 DraftKings points on three of the four tournaments played here. And then Tony Finau, 73.75 in all four events. So some of those guys, it's a good way to kind of see who's really, you know, dominated or played really well in the last, you know, 3 or 4 years at this actual golf course. And then the last thing I'll do is our normal course history, course form guys. You got Rory McIlroy definitely leading the way on that one. Couple others would be Ricky Fowler. Joel Damon is actually really good course history and current form coming in. Sam Burns, another one that stands out with the double green lights on FanShare. So go check them out over there. Lots of good stuff going on fanshare.com.
Hey, just to kind of plug FanShare again there too, like one thing that I've started doing is looking at their projected ownership and then just make it a team based off of low-owned guys. Dude, I don't know if you've noticed this year, but it has been like a chalk slaughter fest every single week, like week in and week out. Some high-owned guys missing the cut. So if you're avoiding those guys, and they do a really good job of projecting, you know, I mean, they're not going to get everything exactly right, but they are projecting down to close within a couple percentage points. You know, you can just basically tell who's going to be low-owned. And so going in and popping in a lineup with some just low-owned guys, you know, then you're not just dead in the water when you roster Lucas Glover and he starts double, and your weekend's over Thursday morning.
Yeah, no, they've been crushing it over there as usual. And it's nice because last year was a lot of chalk, lots of chalk last year.
Dude, how different is it this year?
It's been a bit different. Been back to normal a little bit there, Jesse.
That's where I got all this gray hair up here, dude. I don't know that people on YouTube can probably see it. It's all kinds of gray hairs up there because the chalk continues to get just murdered week in and week out.
Yep. Fun times. But let's try to see where we can find our plays we like this week, and then we can pivot off of them based on ownership over there on FanShare Sports. We'll start off with the 10K and above on DraftKings. Rory McIlroy, 11.8. Jason Day, 11,000. You got Ricky Fowler at 10.6. Justin Rose at 10.3. And Hideki Matsuyama back up to 10.1. The pricing, I'll say this much. It's good pricing. It's just much – there's a lot of names that kind of aren't where we're used to seeing them in the last few weeks. After that week off, maybe things change on their algorithm. I don't know. But we'll see it throughout this whole pricing. But, Jesse, 10K and above, who are you liking?
I mean, obvious. I think you make a week in, week out, you make a case for everybody that's high owned here. I think a couple things to point out. Rory is $800 more than Jason Day. I don't know how popular those two will be. I think Ricky will be the most popular guy above $10,000. Now, of recent weeks, it feels like most guys above 10K aren't really getting above 20% or at least above 25% on most weeks. So it's not like super chalk. We're mostly finding that in the 9K range, sometimes in the high sevens with the super chalk. I will say also too that I think Justin Rose is very interesting. So obviously coming off the miscut at the Masters, absolute just shit show at the Masters.
Bogey finish. Thank you, Justin Rose.
And I can't one and done him this week, so keep this in mind, people. I cannot one and done him because I one and done him at the Masters where he missed the cut. So I cannot jinx him. So I think that he will be, at least in my mind, he should be the kind of low-owned option up here. He missed the cut in 2017, but he finished third and fifth in 16 and 14 at this tournament. 17 was the year that they played it at a different golf course, so unless that was – no, that was – the 17 miscut was at the PGA Championship, excuse me, because that was in August. So he missed the cut at the PGA Championship the last time he played this tournament or at this golf course. Sorry, we're all over the place. Third and fifth in his two previous appearances at this golf course.
At this time of the year.
Yeah, at this time of the year. So keep that in mind. I don't know how much that will be weighted in people's models, whatever. But I feel like he should be the kind of low-owned guy to go to up here. And you're saving $1,500 over Rory. For me, it's either Rory or Justin Rose up here. Like, those are the two guys that I love. Ricky, from a stat perspective, I just don't never like playing Ricky. $11,000 for fucking Jason Day.
Kill me now.
Most people, but the thing is, most people probably say that. And then, his last two appearances at the Wells Fargo Championship, when it's been played here, first and ninth. He finished ninth at the 2017 PGA Championship as well. So, and he's not finished outside, besides the Valspar miscut, he hasn't finished outside the top 10 since the Tournament of Champions. So basically all year, he missed one cut and he's been top 10-ing. I don't remember him being fifth at the Masters. That's wild.
He went up the board on the end.
Yeah.
He played quietly really well.
He shot 67 on Sunday. I just don't remember him being there. Obviously, Tiger overshadowed everything at the Masters. But, so maybe Jason Day. I just talked myself into some Jason Day. Yeah.
Well, I don't mind shocking yourself into Jason Day because I think he'll be the lowest owned up here. I think, like you said, a lot of people are going to have that narrative of why am I paying $11,000 for Jason Day?
Yeah, especially with the WD concerns that a lot of people still probably have in their minds. That's an interesting take. I might be wrong about Justin Rose in that his price is so depressed. He might be the highest owned, actually. You know what I mean?
Ricky's going to be the highest. I think it's all Ricky Fowler.
Yeah.
The way, at least that's how it usually goes week in and week out. Even when he's not playing well, people just love Ricky Fowler. That seems to be the play. I think it'll be Ricky. I'm with you on Rory. If you can pay up for it, it's like this. You don't really need a lot of analysis on playing Rory McIlroy. He's literally playing lights out golf. Like, literally – it's like one or two strokes around difference from winning the whole damn thing most of the time. Like, he's playing that good of golf right now. If you want to get up to Rory, knock yourself out. Zero problem with that at all. I will be intrigued. I mean, we're in the Slack chat on Wednesday and we're talking ownerships. I'm really curious to see where day lines up. Cause if they're saying like 5% or something, you got to throw them in somewhere because that's just too much leverage on the field. It sucks at 11,000. He's got to basically win the whole damn thing. But it's really interesting, that kind of leverage, because an $11,000 Jason Day, even top 10 in it, can get you so much more chalk down below, and you'll be just fine. So it's little differences like that. You can almost go five chalk pieces with Jason Day at like 5% and go crazy. No, that's just guessing. Like, we don't know for sure. But outside of those two, I love Justin Rose this week. Like, you hit everything I was going to say. Is, you know, that miscut of the Masters might scare people away. T9, T8, previous two events. He's played great. And like you said, a third and a fifth the last two times he's played here. He's made 5 of 7 cuts here. He's an elite player in this world. And to be priced at 10-3 compared to the rest of the price in there kind of stands out to me a little bit. So maybe it will make him chalky. I still think Ricky's the chalk of the chalk, but maybe Rose is the second chalkiest guy up there. We'll see. But for now, I'm going Justin Rose. I'm going up top. That's my guy. It'll be very interesting to see where it all plays out. $9,000 range is very, very interesting. Sergio Garcia up to 9,900. The local boy, Webb Simpson at 97. Paul Casey off of another missed cut. $9,500. We saw how that worked at the Valspar. Tony Finau, 93. Phil Mickelson, course history, 101 at $9,100. And Gary Woodland at 9,000. Lots to like per usual in this 9K range. Maybe that's why it's been chalky more often than not. Jesse, what are you looking at here?
Yeah, the range with Casey, Finau, Mickelson. You know, obviously Paul Casey, another just absolute trash bag miscut at the Masters. I don't know what was wrong with him there. Like, it was one of the most like poor performances I've seen him put in a long, long time. Couldn't putt, couldn't hit a green, which is really odd for him. I mean, he usually is hitting greens majority of the time at a 70% clip, and he hit 55% of the greens at the Masters and then averaged 31 putts per round, which is absolutely just atrocious. But I'll play him this week at 9,500. I don't know. Like, I would think that ownership would be, you know, kind of suppressed a little bit. He's got pretty good course history around here, especially the last three times he's played the golf course. Fifth, 13th at the PGA Championship, and 41st back in 2016. So fifth last year kind of stands out there. Tony, obviously, like you talked about with when you're doing the fan share recap, you know, he's I don't know. Like, I wasn't really huge on him at the Masters, and you know, he finished fifth, and he's had kind of just a blah year. Maybe that turns it around for him a little bit. He's made the cuts all four appearances at Quail Hollow. No better finish than 16th, which was back in 2015. But you know, if he can get the putter going a little bit, he'll be fine. And then, yeah, Phil Mickelson's totally playable in my opinion, $9,100. I don't know how popular he will be. I think Tony will be popular, as he usually is. So that might suck some ownership from Paul Casey and Phil Mickelson. It'll be interesting to see how that kind of range shakes out. But those are the guys for me. I think Webb will be overowned. I feel like every year there's a North Carolina narrative. He had one second place finish in 2015. Other than that, you know, he's finished outside the top 20 every year since 2013. And yeah, I'm just not a huge Webb guy. You know, finished fifth at the Masters, 16th at the Heritage, which is pretty good, but I'm just not a huge Webb dude. And Sergio at 9,900 with his course history, no thank you.
Yeah, Webb's a local boy, but he's got a house on the course. So you're going to hear that over and over this week. But yeah, Paul Casey at 9,500 bucks, coming off, you know, three straight good starts here. That miscut, you know, he had that miscut a few weeks back, then goes and wins the Valspar, T9, then misses the cut at the Masters. This could be another nice low-owned option there with Paul Casey. So like that quite a bit. Finau is always worth a look, especially in a field like this where he's kind of – I'm not going to say he's overlooked, but there's a lot of talent above him that people might gravitate around instead of just focusing on Finau, which seems to be the case where he's usually priced. So he's kind of in the right pricing for once, if that makes sense. So Finau, I definitely like him at 93. And then Phil Mickelson, like, my goodness. I've mentioned in the course history – you look at it, he's made 15 of 15 cuts with 10 top 10s. His last five events, including the PGA here, is T5, T18, T4, T4, T11. The T18 was a PGA, so T5, T4, T4, T11, last four times here at the Wells Fargo. Like, that's pretty damn impressive. You know, it can always be a little sketchy with Phil. We get it, but when Phil knows a course, Phil tends to know a course. That's just, you know, look at Pebble, look at things like that. He plays these courses very, very well. So I think Phil at 91 is a very good play that could be super low owned. And then I'll mention Gary Woodland just because he's made 6 of 7 cuts here. Missed the cut his last time here. But prior to that, T24, T4, and T18. Coming in, you know, not the greatest of forms. He's been like T30 in it quite a bit, but could be an overlooked guy at 9K in this range that could be a nice, I guess, ownership pivot if you so choose. All right, let's get into the 8K range. You got Henrik Stenson at 89, Patty Reed at 88, Kokrak at 87, Sungjae at 86, Lucas Glover at 85, Chucky Three Sticks at 84, Benny On at 83. Johnny Vegas is one of those guys that price bump $8,200. Aaron Wise, 81. List, 8,000. And Bradley at 8,000. Where are you looking at in the 8K range, Jesse?
This is like the all-terrible putter range, isn't it? Like,
yep, pretty much.
It's like so many bad putters here. I think I like Kokrak myself this week. So at 8,700, obviously the form coming in is like really good. 16th, 7th, 2nd, 47th, 10th in his last five starts. And then throw another 9th in there. If you go back to 6th. Start recently, just hitting the ball really well. His course history around here is not great, so that gives me a little bit of caution. Miscut, 33rd, miscut, his last four appearances at this golf course. The 33rd was at the PGA Championship, so he's missed the cut the last 3 years at Quail Hollow when they played the Wells Fargo there. Makes it a little bit sketch, maybe drive some people off of him. Maybe the price drives some people off of him because it's hard to stomach paying $8,700 for Jason Kokrak. But it'll be interesting to see on that how his ownership shakes out. I'll play him. I don't really care. Lucas Glover, another guy. Terrible putter. He'll start double. Weekend will be over really quick. But I'll play him at $8,500 just because I guess I'm a masochist. I don't know. He's been really odd this year, right? So, like, if he's not missing the cut, he's, like, top 15-ing. It's the oddest thing I've ever seen. Miscut the Heritage, 14th, 13th. Miscut the Players, 10th, 4th, 7th. Miscut at Phoenix, 12th, 7th, 14th.
Sounds like
that's all he does.
Sounds like a GPP play to me.
I mean, fuck, dude. Like, he's either missing the cut or he is top 15-ing. I mean, now, people give him shit all the time on Twitter because he's always popular. I mean, he was 24% owned on average at the Heritage, and he missed the cut, which I hope drives some people off of him. I hope they're jaded. So those are the two really plays for me in this range. I think Ben On, Vegas, and Wise, that range is – the more I think about Ben On putting on these greens, the less I want to play him. Now, he has made the cut the last two times at this golf course, 63rd last year. And then 28th at the PGA Championship in August. So you'll take that for what you will. Vegas is playing good golf, but he's never really had any success around this track. He did finish 42nd here last year. So I don't know how much I can play him at $8,200. I mean, like, this range, like, is like the ultimate tilt range, isn't it?
Yep. Yes, it is. You mentioned Kokrak. I'm a fan of that as well. I just ride that hot streak in there. He's been so close lately, T16 or better in four of his last five. Not the best course history here, as you mentioned.
But we can't jump off of him at this point.
No, you got to ride a train out. We got to get a few tilted missed cuts before we say goodbye. so that's just par for the course. So Kokrak at 87 is definitely in play. I think Chucky Three Sticks is interesting from just a how he's playing perspective. Made 11 to 15 career cuts here, T21 here last year, coming off a missed cut at the Masters. So a very interesting look. Or that at the RBC?
Heritage.
RBC, yeah.
It was at the Heritage. Yeah. He made the cut. The Masters finished
32nd. Yeah, I got it now. But I think he's an interesting player there, at least for cash games at 8,400. Johnny Vegas, Luke List, like you said, so tilting. GPP, I have no problem rolling the dice with them because Vegas is coming in pretty good form. He's a bomber. If he gets it going, he can play well here, but he just never has. So it's really interesting. And there's Luke List, who's always that guy. If he can ever figure out a putt, we'll contend. But T9 here last year. The one guy I did not mention. So for me right now, it's Kokrak and CH3. I must really hate myself because of what he's done to me recently. But Patrick Reed, 6 of 6 made cuts here, including 8th place last year. You know, he had that brutal miscut. He's coming back at T24 at the Masters and a T36. Not playing the greatest of golf, but maybe that week off is what Pat needed. He's played so much freaking golf. I think he's going to be super low on like he usually is. The course history is great. He's $8,800. I think he's extremely overlooked here, and I wouldn't be shocked if, you know, you get like a T20 with T10 upside with Patty Reed. It's interesting. It's risky. Coke Rack and CH3 might be quote unquote safer plays, but Patty Reed at 88 has my attention.
Let's if you could combine Reed's course history with Coke Rack's current form, and they're like obviously right there together, 8,800 and 8,700, you'd have like the ideal golfer because Patrick Reed's course history is really good. Mm-hmm. Coke Rack sucks. Patrick Reed's coming in still not playing very good golf, and his form is not good. I don't know what Ledbetter is doing there, but and then Coke Rack's obviously playing really good golf. So that's, I mean, that's, you know, Reed's probably the pivot if you're looking for somebody lower owned. So yeah, I'm with you on that. I won't play any Patrick Reed, but
oh, he's tilting. Trust me, he's tilting.
No, that's why I don't play him. I don't like him. So yeah. It's just my bias coming out. But his course history is really good.
I think it'd be fun because you can go Rose, Casey, and Reed in each range, and people that pissed people off lately, and see the ownership on those three.
Hey, that's not a bad idea, actually.
Let's go to the 7K range. Not going to read them off. We can just do the whole 7K. Who are you looking at in the 7K range?
Yeah, it's starting at the top. J.B. Holmes. He's got a good, really good course history. He's made the cut every year since 2011 here, besides 2015, and obviously past winter in 2014. You know, he's so hit and miss, man. He's like really one of those guys that I don't ever get right, but I think he's playable, especially for a GPP this week. Rory Sabatini, man, your boy, really good showing at the Heritage. He was in contention until that 73 on Sunday.
He was one of the 66 players.
Yeah. Yeah. That's rough.
Yeah.
So I mean, I think he's playable. I think a lot of people, you know, won't be able to stomach the $7,700 price tag there. So I think he's very interesting. Nick Watney at $7,600. Obviously finished second here last year. His course history is really weird. Second miscut, 10th, 8th, miscut, 22nd. Going back to 2010, he didn't play at this golf course from in 17 or 16. But and then two straight miscuts. I mean. You know, at 7,600, it's kind of rough. You mentioned Joel Dahlman earlier. I do like him. Finished 16th here last year, and he's been coming back into some better form here recently. So I do like him at 7,600. Probably my favorite play in the whole entire region here is Michael Thompson at 7,400. Very boomer bust guy. Finished 10th at the Heritage, but then missed the cut to Valspar. Finished 70th at the Players, missed the cut to API. But just looking at just kind of doing a deep dive into some stats. Some like course history stats. He kind of stuck out. He's not really had a whole heck of a lot of success around here. 42nd miscut, 28th, 11th miscut, 64th. He did have obviously 11th place finish. Is his best finish since 2011. That was in 2014. But I feel like he's playing better golf at this point than he was last year. So I like him a lot at 74. Moving down the list, Sam Burns at 7,200. He did make the cut here last year and has made quite a few in a row on tour and finished 9th at the Heritage. So his form coming in is pretty good. Last but not least, for me, would be HV3 at $7,000. Another North Carolina boy. He'll be pumped and jacked to play this week. He's made the last two cuts at the Wells Fargo Championship. He is coming off a missed cut at the Heritage, though. He's at $7,000, so he could go either way. But I like him enough to play him at 7,000 this week.
Yep. Always a fan of the HV3. I'm 100% on board with you on JB Holmes at 79. I'm like scary thinking about making him an OA deep pick right now. And it's really terrifying me to have that much love for JB Holmes, but plays great at this course. He's won here before, as you talked about, three top 25s, two top 10s and 8 of 12 cuts made, coming in okay form, not great form by any means, but JB's all over the board every week. Yeah, and he plays these courses very, very well, these long kind of courses, shot maker type courses after he bombed off the tee. That's a JB specialty. So $7,900 for Holmes, big fan of that. If you want to pivot off of that, though, Keith Mitchell is coming in pretty interesting to me. T34 here last year, loves Bermuda greens, bomb and gouge type course, did come off a missed cut, but prior to that, playing really good golf. He's interesting to me at that $7,800 price range. I'll be on the Sabatini train at 77 if it fits out. He used to be an automatic play for me when he was in the 6Ks. Maybe not as automatic at this price point, but definitely on the radar at 7,700. I'm with you on Michael Thompson at 74. That's a very intriguing price range for a boomer bust type player with a pretty good upside at that price point. A couple more here. Danny Lee at $7,300 is a guy I like to target a lot, usually on more iron player courses, but maybe it's his iron play that plays so well here. Missed the cut last time out, but then a T9, T13, T50 in his previous three. He's got 4 or 6 cuts here, including one top 10, that T9. Coming in okay form, made his last three cuts. So Danny Lee's on the radar at $7,300. And a couple other ones. First, I want to get to, one I'm going to look at is Seamus Power, another bombing gout type guy, T27 here last year. He had a T49 at the Players when it played here, coming off a T6 his last time out. He's the guy that can be okay, but he's also 71, so there is that risk built in. The guy I want to ask you about, Jesse, our boy Flatbill's at 71. He's not coming in great form, but what's your thought on him?
Perez?
Yep.
Man, I hadn't looked at him at all. Is he coming off an injury or what?
That's what we thought, but it's like all of a sudden, they said he tore his Achilles, but usually that's like over a year-long deal. Now he's playing, so it might not be worth even gambling on him. I'm just curious because $7,100, he finished T2 at the Players here 2 years ago, didn't play here the year before, but he's made 8 of 13 cuts at this golf course.
Yeah, he hasn't played in a month and a half. His last start was the API in March.
T50. Hmm.
I mean, in the $5 GPP, if you got 150 lineups, you might put him in five. I don't mind that at all.
Yeah, I was just curious.
Because nobody will be on him. Nobody exactly. will play him.
No one will be on him. The upside is pretty huge if he's good. And you'd have to imagine he's not going to come out if he's not. So he literally doesn't give a shit about making another paycheck.
They said he tore his Achilles and he's playing
it. Yeah, some Achilles injury. And I thought it was a torn Achilles. I'm like, there's no freaking way.
Yeah, there's no way he tore it. Maybe he just had like a strain or something.
Yeah, who knows? Maybe his wife just had a baby. He wanted to stay at home and didn't want to sound like I'm taking maternity leave or something. Who knows? It's Pat Perez. You never know with Pat Perez. He could have been shooting Chive commercials for all we know. But all right, let's go to the 6K range, Jesse. Who you liking down here?
Start at the top here, Hank Lebioda. Never played here, which this is kind of a theme of the guys down in this range. But 17th at the Texas Open. And I think him and Curtis Luck top five last week at the theme thing that we can't, for whatever reason, we can't have DraftKings for. I don't understand that. So it's $6,800. But I could see him also being like the most popular play at 6,800. When I say that, like 10% owned. Brian Harman. So his course history, he's missed one cut since 2012. That was in 2015. His form is trash. But when I look at some, just course history stats, he kind of sticks out there. He's having some success around here. So I think he's interesting at $6,800. My boy Josh Teeter at $6,500. He made three cuts in a row here from 2012 to 2014. Hasn't played here since 2014. He's coming off a made cut at the Texas Open. So I think he's decently interesting. And then also, like you mentioned earlier, Chip McDaniel. So this kid just Monday qualified. He shot, I think, 65 today.
Was he the one that shot 500 or whatever?
Yeah. He shot, he won by like two shots in the Monday qualifier. Somehow he was like 4, 5, 6% owned at the Texas Open. He missed the cut, obviously, which was – it was a miscut after the secondary cut, so he MDF'd or whatever. But I hope he's not that popular. I'm trying to get Chip McDaniel at 1% or less. I'm not trying to get a 6% owned Chip McDaniel. One thing I've noticed this year, especially, thankfully DraftKings changed it because they used to not add in – the Monday qualifiers or any late ads or withdrawals or anything after they initially came out with it was set, this is what you get, after they initially come out with the pricing, but they've started adding in these Monday qualifiers, which I think is awesome. And one thing about them is obviously these guys go out and play the golf course and then they have to shoot low scores. I mean, if you look at some of these Monday qualifier scores, they are fucking nuts. Like, you want to be a professional golfer, go check and see how hard it is to Monday qualify at a golf, at a PGA Tour event, let alone like whatever that's going on at the web.com events. I don't even follow that. But so I've noticed that these guys actually end up having a lot of success, especially with, Corey Connors a couple weeks before the Masters or right before the Masters. He Monday qualified and won. So they've had some success this year, which is fun to see and watch and shit like that. So that's about all I got down in this range, though.
Yeah, I like the Chip McDaniel call. I don't mind that at all. $6,400. Brian Harman, another guy I like. His course history, phenomenal. Recent form, sucky, as you said. So very interesting there to see how that plays out. Robert Streb, another course history guy, bad current form, 5 of 6 made cuts, including a top 10 here at 6,800. Another local boy to look at, Johnny Wagner. He's made 6 of 12 cuts here, including a T13 last year. He's coming in really GPP-type form. Missed cut, T33. Missed cut, T2, 57th. Like, all over the board with Johnny. But $6,700, of course, he knows very, very well. And the last guy I'll mention here, I seem to mention him every week on the lower-owned or the below 7K price tags. I bet you they gave you 3 guesses. You could guess him. But I'm going Julian Etzelin yet again. He's played here one time, T36. He withdrew his last time out, but prior to that, T26, 24, 36, T35. He's always in the 6K range. Very consistent guy. He'll give you hope a little bit because he'll make some runs, but more often than not, he makes the cut. He doesn't kill your team. He helps it at his price point at $6,600. Etchlin will be on my radar.
Let me throw one more at you, Peter Malnati. Did you see his walkout song this past week?
I didn't see anything from this past week. What did he come out to?
I forgot who he was playing with, but they came out to If You're Happy and You Know It.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not going to comment on that.
Yeah, it's time I read somebody's tweet. It's time to end the walkout songs after these guys come out to that song. But he's interesting to me, 34th year last year, and then he's coming in pretty good form, 16th, 23rd, 60th in his last 3 starts. So $6,700, and nobody will be on him.
Yeah, it's not a bad call at all. Let's recap real quick here. 10K and above, give me one guy. If you had to pay one guy, 10K and above.
Rory.
Yeah. Since you're going Rory, I'll go Justin Rose. Because I probably won't make it to 11-8 based on the lower guys I just don't like. So give me Justin Rose at 10-3. Give me one guy in the 9Ks.
And I'm feeling Phil this week. I think I might play quite a bit of Phil.
The more I looked at getting ready for this, Phil Mickelson had my attention. Since you gave Phil, I'll give Paul Casey.
Have you seen Phil's Cav videos?
Which ones? I saw
one. He just came out. He's came out with parts 2, 3, and 4 on how to get the Cavs. Three, four, and five.
For a guy that people hated, if you don't appreciate Phil Mickelson now, you should just give up. Like he's doing social media how social media is meant to be done.
You got to go watch it because I'll check it out. He rips on Bubba Watson.
Oh, beautiful. Beautiful.
It's funny. It's good. Man. Like big he fan. Does a good job with it.
Lefty on lefty crime. Give me two guys in the 8K range.
Kukrak and Glover.
I'm going to go Patty Reed and CH3.
Ooh, good luck. Yep.
We're rolling the dice, boys and girls. I might have an early weekend. Give me two guys in the 7Ks.
So two guys I didn't mention before. I'm just going to go ahead and mention them now. Strillman and Berger. Looking at some course history stuff. They've had some success around here. Strillman, not so much, but recently. But he's playing better recently. And then Berger is on the comeback train, man. Jump on Berger now, I think, because he's not going to be in the 7,000s, I don't think, very long. Coming off an injury, and he's starting to play better.
Yeah, I could see that for sure.
He just puts a full 4 days together. Like he started really well at the Heritage and then kind of fell off there on the weekend. But he's coming back, man, and at $7,700, you get a guy with pretty high upside.
He used to be like a 9, 10K guy at times.
Yeah, he's a proven winner on the PGA Tour. So
not a bad call there. I like that. I'll go JB Holmes and Seamus Power. Let's mix up some Seamus Power at 71. So it'll be a 2 in the 7K range. I'll be targeting. Who's your one punt if you have to punt?
It's going to be, you know, Lebioda would be the – but like I said, I think he's going to be higher on. So if you're looking for a lower own guy, I'm telling you, like looking at these Monday qualifiers, Chip in particular at 6,400.
Yeah, if Chip's low owned, I don't mind jumping on that at all. If not, I'll be looking at Julian Etchulin.
Man, I couldn't believe how owned he was at the Texas Open. It blew my mind. I mean, is it because he came off the top 5 in Corrales?
It might have been that, but it seemed like, you know, you listen to Mayo, and that's about all I listen to nowadays. But it seemed like
– I know he mentioned him, and I think Wiley mentioned him too.
Yeah, so I'm guessing it went elsewhere. Everyone was trying to be the first to mention the new guy. It's like – what was it, a few weeks earlier, that kid that played that everyone wanted to be on. And he played pretty well. I can't remember what his name is now. I'm blanking on it. But kid out of college.
Oklahoma and, State.
Everybody wanted him.
Matt Wolf.
Matt Wolf. It seemed like everybody couldn't do a podcast unless they talked about him at least 12 times. So,
yeah.
Seemed to be par for the course. And when people do that, the chalkiness happens.
That's true. That's true.
All right. Give me three GPP targets this week, Jesse.
So, for a guaranteed prize pool, for those who don't know what a GPP stands for, that's what it stands for. We even give you some knowledge on the always pressing PGA Tour. So I'm just stalling now. I think Dahman is one, Berger's another. So like those are two guys in the 7K range, and then Glover.
Okay, I like that for sure. Definitely volatile GPP play for me. Casey Reed in Vegas. I think those will be interesting for me. Casey might not be as GPP, but I'm thinking more ownership wise. What I'll get on that one. Give me three cash game plays.
Cash is tough this week. Just looking over this pricing, like it's very sharp. I think Sabatini is borderline cash at 7,700. Excuse me. If you're looking for some super salary savings, Lebioda at 6,800 would potentially be another one. And then if I'm looking, you know, more towards the top, it's hard not to play Finau in cash. I mean, he's going to be popular anyways, so why not just eat it there? And
yeah, I don't hate that. I'm looking at Phil, Woodland, and JB Holmes would be kind of the three I'd start out with and see where it takes me from there.
I feel like, the one thing, I haven't played a whole lot of cash, and then whenever I do, like, I'm not successful at it, so I still steer away from it. But, like, you know, I feel like this is the week where 5 of 6 is going to be easy money.
Very good chance.
Cash.
The way the pricing is, for sure. I could definitely
see that. This is sharp pricing. Like, there's no obvious values.
It'll be hard to get to the five figures and get a team that feels comfortable down below. This is very difficult. Because usually at least you have low 7K guys you can feel pretty good about. You really don't have those this week. So
yeah. So balanced is probably going to be very popular. So if you go more stars and scrubsy, you might differentiate yourself a little bit there too.
Most definitely. All right, Jesse, pick to win time. Give me a long shot as well.
If I just start out with my long shot,
that sounds
Jason
good.
Kokrak.
40-1.
Telling you, one day. We're going to hit it big. And then, so other than Kokrak, man, I mean, it's hard not to see. Like, I could maybe potentially stomach some fee now. What is his price?
20-1. Not bad price.
It's not terrible. You know, obviously, what's Rory? 5, 6, 7?
He's 6.5.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, it'll be interesting there. I like some Gary Woodland at 33. And then JB Holmes is 80-1, and that just has my attention for some reason. I'm not happy with my infatuation with JB Holmes right now.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, he is like – he could win. He's won this year. He's won this golf tournament before. So 80-1, I mean, he's just like – he's so fucking sketchy, and I don't understand it, but –
any man that plays golf in a black glove like that, you got to be concerned. Last time guys hung around in black gloves too long, they were in court for a long, long time driving fucking Broncos. So be careful. Yeah, that was a long wraparound.
And there's your OJ Simpson reference. Yeah, pop culture too on the always pressing media.
Do it all, folks. This is what happens. You give us a week off from golf. You give us a week off. It just fills up with everything you can think of. Let's bring it full circle around here. But that wraps us up, Jesse. Any final thoughts before I really go off the rails?
We should probably end this now.
All right, everybody. Hope you guys have a great week. Green screens plenty. Go check out Jesse on Twitter at DFS Golf Gods. I'm at BDintric. Join us in the Fantasy Degens Slack chat. Just ask one of us for an invite or DM the at Fantasy Degens Twitter handle, and we'll get you in there free of charge. Nothing to worry about there. But good luck this week. And, let's get at it. This is the 2019 Wells Fargo Championship Preview on the Always Pressing PGA DFS Podcast. Catch you guys later. The show goes on, all night till the morning we dream.